Okay, welcome to the meeting. We need to come to order, and as I'm counting it in the room, we have only Karen missing, so we do have a quorum. And so we should stand and do the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, all right, as it turns out, we are here to review the employee handbook. I'm going to ask that Susan start us off.
Shoot, I should have brought that one sheet that was given to us at the last deal.
Do you want the revisions with that?
Well, that's all right. I expect you will read through them and you will tell us what the difference is. And
I'm afraid I don't have my notes with me. I like came here straight from the Airbnb.
Okay. Well, I don't know what's the easiest way to go through this. I mean, if you've looked at it, if you have any questions, we can talk about any questions that you have.
Well, I would like to approach it like this, if you're open to it. You guys have looked at it more extensively than we've had a chance to. I have in earlier iterations gone through it, but obviously you made some changes. And I just think we should really focus on those, because unless there's something that we're trying to change that we at some point in the past have rectified or whatever, you have probably good reason to be saying, you know, we needed to look at this. This is weak.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, most of it is, or a lot of it is changes that we made based on employers' counsel, or that I made based on employers' counsel's recommendations. So just changing in wording and taking things out. And we also have things that will need legal review at some point again. But, I mean, the big things, probably the biggest things to discuss would be like the leave issues. Mm-hmm. That would be that, you know, that's something that I feel like that we would need to talk about in more details.
And is that so based mainly on formula?
That, yeah.
Okay.
So, so one of the major changes that we made is that you used to have to wait till you were here for a year to be able to get vacation. And I'd like to change it to 6 months because people don't stay as long as they used to. Mm-hmm. So they have to be here for 6 months before they can take any vacation time. They will accrue the vacation time starting when they start, but they can't take it until after they've been here 6 months instead of waiting for a year.
And is there a reason why a 6 month threshold and not why it can't be a month?
No.
I mean, you don't accrue much time.
Right.
You don't, but you might.
But I mean,
your third month, a relative dies and you need to take some leave.
Don't we have some bereavement?
Now, so the new piece with the bereavement leave, I actually took the bereavement leave out completely. Mm-hmm. Because the new law covers the bereavement leave. So they start accruing their sick leave immediately. And so they can use their sick leave for bereavement leave.
Well, I was just using that by way of example. You know, a relative is getting married or whatever. I mean, there are reasons why you may need to take leave. And I just think that if they're working here and they're accruing the leave, I don't see why they can't have access into it, particularly if we don't allow them to, you know, do like a debit kind of situation where they would owe us leave. I mean, if it's their leave, then I think they should be able to take it.
The other case in point that I see also is we if you get to this leave situation faster, the chances that we're going to get more people willing to come to work for the library system, because our library, I still think pay-wise, we are not at the top level compared to other places, other types of jobs. So again, people look at the situation and getting a benefit quicker is maybe picks up the slack for our lesser pay. And maybe sometime in the future we will get to the better pay, but right now we don't have the population to support a large budget. And so there's constraints. And again, the problem is we're adjacent to two big counties that have larger resources. So I'm thinking this deal needs to go from 6 down to 3 months, and just to it's an enhancement that money wise really is not costing our budget that much. But it makes us look a lot better to potential employees.
Okay. Yeah. 3 months is,
I think that's good reason.
I'm obviously in support of any kind of reduction in
okay.
that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Although we do have the advantage of being able to trap people here with our washed out bridges.
Well, that's true. That's true. They move in and then they can't escape. So, but that is the problem is we don't want to turn the library into a B&B, so.
Well, but there's also the advantage of being able to have chickens.
Oh, chickens
in the library?
Well.
I have a friend that has chickens in his basement, and I don't think his wife is with the program yet. I asked him, I said, how's this going on over with your wife? And he never answered me back, so. I know it wouldn't go over with my wife.
We do have a chicken lover in our midst here.
You know, I love chickens, especially when they're fried. But
have you ever walked one on a leash?
No. Yes. Well, I had a class where one showed up at the end of the line. Uh-huh. And I looked at the lady and asked what breed that was, and I was told that was a chicken dog. And
we're bird walking again, but yeah. No pun intended. But
mine were divers.
Smart.
It was a fat one.
Fat chicken.
Okay. Wanted one to take on the dog
so
next
I,
to it.
Three months. Oh, I love you guys. Vacation benefits. So before you didn't get your vacation until you were here for a year, and then you had to be here through the fifth year, and at the start of the sixth year, it went to the next level of vacation. And then you had to wait till you started the 11th year to go to the next level of vacation. Okay. And so most everywhere I've ever worked, it's generally you're here 5 years and then you're here 10 years. And so I just wanted to bump those up 1 year.
Yeah, think if somebody has been here for 12 years, you don't have,
okay.
You got to give them some recognition.
Okay. And okay, so this is another philosophical question that I wanted to talk to you guys about. So right now, our sick leave is called sick/personal leave, and it is more generous than the law. So the law says, Colorado law says that you earn 1 hour for every 30 hours that you work. our sick leave is that you earn 1 hour for every 20 hours that you work. So kind of as a Band-Aid, before I had this finished, before we had any kind of draft, I had what I put in Paylocity was two different levels of sick leave. So I put in one level for full-timers and part-timers to 16 hours or a week or more. And that is that they earn 1 hour of sick leave for every 20 hours worked. And they also, when they leave, their sick leave is paid out at 75%. Okay. And then what I've been doing just in practice, because I had to follow the law, for substitutes and anybody that's working 15 or fewer hours a week, they are earning 1 hour for every 30 hours worked. But when they leave, we don't pay them their sick leave. Because, plus, I mean, it's like for substitutes, it's super hard. When do we even give substitutes sick leave? You know, is it like, do we call them and, oh, I'm sorry, I can't substitute now because I'm sick, and then they take sick leave and we pay them? You know, I mean, it kind of, but we have to, but we have to, legally we have to, but it's just kind of.
Yeah, I run into that. I've got an employee who's 4 hours a week.
Right.
And usually when she's sick, we just reschedule it because I really, really need her to be there.
Right.
And I mean, we don't have, your situation is somewhat different because it's like on an on-call basis.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, even with her, it's like, okay, so you're sick today. I guess I'll pay you for today and we'll reschedule for today. So I end up paying her twice in the same week.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't know what else to do with her sick leave.
So I guess my question for you is philosophically, you know, I want to follow the law for the reasons that people take sick leave. And which now includes, as of last week, bereavement leave. And like, also, it just includes now, if your child has snow day at school and you have to stay home for that, it now includes that as sick leave as well in the law. So they've broadened the law, you know, and we have listed in our policy now, you know, what the reasons are that you can take sick leave. So are you comfortable?
Family sick leave, like if you have to take your child to the doctor, mm-hmm. or you have to take mm-hmm. like your parent to the doctor or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, all of that's included as sick leave.
Well, we would never admit to that when I had a daughter. Like, well, I still have a daughter, but I'm saying when she was sick, it was like I was sick.
Right, right.
We didn't discuss any of this, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So
this is nice.
Okay. So are you comfortable? I mean, I've got a whiteboard over there.
Are we comfortable with the two levels?
Yeah. Are you comfortable with the two levels? You know, and the way I've been interpreting it. That's that's one of the things you guys caught in the board meeting, because I had some yellow marked areas where, or actually, it's grayed out. So. Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, does Paylocity, are they going to have problems with the two different systems?
No, because I've created two different categories. One is called e-sick, which is employee sick. The other one is called sub-sick, so it's substitute sick. And so it's just two different, you know.
Well, I think if they work for us, we have to accrue it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's a question.
Yeah,
we're going to have to have it. If we don't have it in the budget now, it's going to have to be in there in the next budget.
It's in the budget that we pay out, you know, the sick leave when people leave. We pay it out at 75%. But I just want to clarify in here that for substitutes we don't pay it out, and that. Yeah, if they don't use it, they just lose it from year to year too.
Well, that seems unfair to me.
Well, that's the way that
we're talking about it. We're talking about temp employee.
How long?
People aren't.
What is the turnover in substitutes? I mean, do we have a large turnover? I mean, or is it not? I mean,
it depends on where you, you know. We have some substitutes that we've had for years and years and years and years. One substitute just celebrated her 14th anniversary. I don't know that she was probably just a library employee before, but then she retired and now she's just subbing for us. And it's also a pattern that we've seen that when people quit, they don't really quit. If they take another job, they say, you know, I'm happy to help out. I'm happy to substitute. So we switch them from being e-sick to S-sick. So I switched them from being employee sick to accruing as substitutes.
That is an interesting question, though. So, I mean, you give an example of somebody going from an employee status to a substitute status, mm-hmm. but what if we had a substitute going from one to the other? And the real question there isn't the change in the hours, because I don't think it really matters. My question would be would they be keeping their sick leave? As is.
As if they were a substitute.
Whatever they had accrued.
I think I would roll that over. I would switch that.
If they move up, we roll it over, and if they're moving down, then.
Well, if they're moving down, what I do is I pay them out. I pay the sick leave out at 75% according to the manual, and then they're switched to substitute sick, and then if they leave from that position, we wouldn't pay them out.
Right. Okay. I think that's fine. To me, it makes sense for people, and you have to understand that if you're not a full-time employee, you can't expect full-time benefits. I mean, to my way of thinking, being a part-time person is it's a whole different mindset. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that our laws, if we're trying to give people that are part-time all the same benefits as somebody is full-time, to my way of thinking, that's not quite right from the standpoint, unless it's just you only want to work X number of hours. And
yeah. Well, and strictly speaking, from a fiduciary standpoint, you're supposed to take into consideration, well, do we owe them that? And from the fiduciary side, sometimes you'd find a lot of people that would say, no, not me.
And that's what surprised me. Employers Council said that we don't have to pay out for either vacation or for sick.
I know.
And because I thought there was case law, but it may be for business that you had to pay out for vacation time.
We're not considered a business?
We're a government entity.
I figured if that alone we would have more restrictions than being a private employer, just because government, you have everybody looking over your shoulder.
It kind of gets to make its own rules about its own policies. So
there, I mean, there were some things that the notes from Employers Council that surprised me. She's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to do there's a thing in Colorado called the comps order, which is it has the minimum standard, has the minimum wage, and has like all the breaks and stuff like that. And we had included it in the previous version of the handbook. And she's like, nope, the comps order does not apply to you. We don't have to include that. I'm like, okay, well, that's exciting, you know? So, yeah.
I mean, with regard to like payout when people leave, I mean, I know that it's problematic, which is why we do the buyout at the end of the year, because we're trying to make sure that we have enough money in the budget that we could pay somebody out
when they go. But I'm also not opposed to saying there's a cap to what rolls, you know, it's like to what rolls over from year to year. That would also keep that within reason.
So the law, the cap for the law is 48 hours that rolls over from year to year. And we don't really have a cap in ours specifically. We do say that like 96 hours is the maximum that you should be able to accrue in a year.
Must accrue but not roll over.
Right. But if you're, it doesn't, the math doesn't work out because you accrue sick leave at 1 hour for each 20 hours worked for a total of 96 hours of paid leave per year. But if you're full time, that's 2,080 hours a year. It doesn't come out to 96. So 2,080 divided by 20. That's 104 hours a year. So that, I don't know, it doesn't quite make sense. Anyway, I guess they're not, it's, you're talking about hours worked. And so you've got.
Are you talking, but well, do we have salary full-time, or not so, not so, hourly full-time people who might be doing overtime?
No.
Yeah, that still wouldn't work.
Yeah. Sorry. So, but it doesn't. It shouldn't include like holidays. So you, if you, it's so actually hours worked. So 2,080 is the total possible in a year, and then we have 11 days times 8, so that's 88 holiday, and then however much vacation you take. So you're only accruing on what you actually work, so probably that does come out to about 96.
It works out, there's probably 100 hours there that you're not accruing stuff for, so that's yeah. Where it comes out.
Yeah, to 96.
Makes sense.
So
I think it should be
left alone. So your original question was,
my original question,
different tiers of
right.
Sick leave
are you comfortable
and policies surrounding
right.
such.
So question one, I guess, is are you comfortable with the different with 1 hour earned for 20 hours and 1 hour earned for 30 hours for subs, and the 1 hour for 30 hours is the law. And we have to give it by law. We have to give it to everybody. So that's why we have to give it to the subs.
Right.
So that's question one. Are you comfortable with keeping those two levels?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question two is payout at termination. So for 1 hour, 1 hour earned for 20 hours for those people that are part-time and full-time, we pay out at 75%. So if they have 100 hours and they're leaving, we will pay them for 75 hours. But the law allows us to not pay anything out. So my feeling was for the subs, I don't want to pay anything out when they leave that amount.
How many subs do we have?
I want to say like 8 maybe, something like that.
Okay. Do you recall on them frequently?
Yeah, we're probably calling on, we probably call a sub a week at least. Like, right now I have one employee who will be gone for 2 weeks. And so she's got a sub covering, you know, she's got subs.
The subs coming in to cover for her vacation or whatever.
What kind of pool of people are we talking?
About, I think it's about like 8 people probably. I can look at my list. Hang on a second.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's reasonable to assume that the subs are not exactly counting on this for, like, their yeah. livelihood. So it's probably not so critical that they get paid yeah. out.
The yeah. problem is hardship in there. If it changes their schedule, that they have to adjust things to be able to sub. I mean, if they're thinking that they're only going to be here 1 day a week, type on average, and then all of a sudden they got to be here 5 days.
Well,
But I would think that would be, you call them up and you say, hey, so-and-so's on vacation. I need somebody for 2 weeks. Can you do it? And they go, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it because I'm working at Safeway for whatever. And they have a choice in the matter to pick it up or not.
Right. Let me play the devil's advocate for just a second. Do we have a group of people who are former employees that sort of make up a lot of our substitutes?
Yes.
And so they sometimes will bend to make sure that they cover because they feel like they sort of belong to the organization?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Then, see, I would assume then that those are the people that you want to bring in because you don't have to teach them a damn thing, and they're going to cover for you, and you can trust them. So
I just wonder, like, how many people are counting on when they leave a job, leaving with their sick leave time pay?
Well, if they're permanent employees, they left with 75%.
Well, let me say too. I don't know if I clarified this, but when you if you're, you know, part-time or full-time, when you leave, your vacation is paid at 100% if you have any vacation left. Okay. So,
which so is, that's permanent or temporary.
Subs don't get
vacation.
Subs don't get vacation time. Again, it's like, it's, you know, it's kind of hard because they made the decision to leave this job on a full-time basis, knowing that they would just come back on a substitute basis. And I think that they would be educated when they left. You'd have an exit interview and you'd say, do you realize when you do this, you're going to lose this benefit, this benefit, this benefit? And have you really thought it over?
But is there any validity to the notion that you'd like to have a pool of people that you can count on?
Absolutely.
That have the knowledge of the institution and everything else. So
here's a devil's advocate.
There we go.
Here we go.
There's another chicken on a leash.
So it's not whether they're dependent on it. It's not about whether they are, you know, switching their schedule around to be here or what their, you know, knowledge is, but did they earn it?
And that, I mean, the thing is that,
and the state of Colorado seems to be saying that they earned it.
They earned it. But I don't even know how to give it to them. I mean, that's my problem. From a supervisory perspective, I don't even know how to give them sick time.
Right.
Because they are only called up when we need them. So, I mean, like I said, if I call them up and they say, oh, I can't, I'm sick. Well, then do we say, okay,
well,
take
sick time. You could get somebody who's covering a 2 week, and sometime in that 2 week, they might have a migraine and not be able to get there.
True.
Potentially.
I defer to.
I don't have strong feelings on it one way.
I don't either. My personal thought is, if you are part time and you are, it's your prerogative to say you're coming in when you're called. Granted, if you feel like that you're you should take advantage when you get the call. That's, again, that's your prerogative. I mean, you can say no. The thing is, I suspect if you're a sub and you say no too many times, pretty soon you're not a sub.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have people on our, we have 8 subs right now. And that's part of the issue with them is like, some of them we haven't used for a really long time because every time we call them, they're like, no, sorry, I can't do it. You know? So then we drop them off.
You keep score there, you know? Yeah. With 3 strikes, you're out. It's baseball.
You also have the other, I'll throw another scenario in there. There are many people that go and maybe they have not worked here and you do not have a full-time job available to them. But you say, I like your education. I'll take you on as a sub. And they would love to have a full-time job with benefits and would look forward to get to that sick time or whatever. That's so
they are earning the sick time.
And I guess that's kind of, I'm starting to lean the other direction. Like, if they earned it,
they should get it.
They should get it. Whether it's paid out when they stop being a sub. I don't know. What happens when people die around here?
We're short of back.
Do we pay out their leave to their family as part of their
project? I have ruts in my subdivision.
I mean, it's involuntary termination. What a way to say it.
I know where I work. Like, when you die, whatever leave you've accrued, your family gets paid for that.
They would get paid for that. And then you also, if you are full time, we also provide accidental death and dismemberment. So you get insurance of one time your salary.
Yeah.
So if you're making $35,000, your family would get $35,000 from our insurance. Okay. If you're full time. Okay. So, okay, you guys have been changing sides back and forth.
Sorry.
So I'm confused about what our answer is at this point.
Okay. I'm leaning towards our new director's initial sort of the two-tier deal. The two-tier.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
My thought is that it's the least amount of pain.
When they leave, they leave.
Okay.
Yep. On the lower tier.
For the subs.
For the subs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So less brain damage.
I'm not sure what the language exactly says, but you had made a distinction between 15 and 16 hours, but 15 and a half hours?
Well, yeah. it's like 15.99 hours.
Okay.
Or whatever. I mean, it does.
Okay, as long as it's
correct. I'll make sure that it says it in there.
Okay. Can promise the next one will go faster.
Well, no, I don't know. I don't know what the next.
A lot of discussion on that one there. I noticed they took the clock down in here, so that was the thought process was.
That's why I wanted my watch.
Oh,
mine's
complicated, so.
Okay, I've just got this one question because it's like page 21.
Okay.
Like the second to the last paragraph.
Okay. Oh, that's
you've got it highlighted. Also, right. You are not paid for unused sick time when you leave.
Right. That's why it's highlighted because I have to change that.
You have to change that. Okay.
Yeah. And I have to.
Good catch.
Yeah. And then on the next page also, when an employee leaves the employment of PNPL, any unused sick leave up to 80 hours, will be paid out at 75% of the employee's current rate of pay. So if they have 96, we only do 80% of
96. 75%
of 80.
Yes.
That's what you said. That's right. Okay. All right.
So we do have a cap.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So what else? What other changes? I don't know. This is a really tough one for you guys. So the dress code, I changed the dress code. And I removed T-shirts as a prohibited item. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that's a tough one.
Said the man in a T-shirt.
So
I'm violating our policy at the moment. Okay.
But so. I'm gonna throw something back that occurred to me about the harassment.
Oh yeah.
Okay, because T-shirts, hats, things, sometimes there is stuff on them that we don't want in the library.
Right. Yes.
Right.
So
that's true.
So I still remember this one guy got so offended. I had a T-shirt on at work, and it said, "A woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle." Uh-huh. He got so ticked. He was terribly insulted. And it wasn't anything that was horrendously nasty. So it's
probably true.
The language that we're proposing was to take T-shirts off of the prohibited list,
right?
And you know, a distinction that might be made, because I understand that this came about because we have Pines and Plains T-shirts, and we have events where
you know, staff might, it might be appropriate to wear that. Like if you're doing something, blowing bubbles in the parking lot, maybe it's hot outside.
Right.
Or, you know, if we commission a like tie-dye day and everybody's, you know, doing tie-dyes or whatever the activity is, where it would be appropriate to have t-shirts on. We might be able to revise that to say something more either along the lines of, you know, Pines and Plains merchandise t-shirts, or we could say that t-shirts that have
it puts you in an interpretive kind of position of having to interpret fish without a bicycle.
One restriction they have at our office is on t-shirts. Yeah. It's like, I can't wear a t-shirt that says, you know, Tommy Bahama on it. I can't wear one.
An advertising.
Yeah, t-shirt. I can't wear one that says Kansas City Chiefs. I could wear a plain t-shirt. I could wear one that says 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. But if it's a commercial t-shirt with graphics on it, then the answer is no. So it's basically I'm stuck with anything related to the courts where I work or plain. And I forget what the wording is that they have for that distinction, but it was basically anything that has commercial graphics is prohibited. Sure.
And just election judging, you can't come in with anything political on. They make you go back out and turn your shirt around.
Turn your shirt inside out. Yeah. Been there, done that.
So yeah.
Sorry, can't wear that.
Can't wear a pin in your hat. I mean, it's
I mean, you shouldn't. This should not be a place of political. You know,
should be neutral. Yeah. Totally neutral.
And maybe that's the wording we need to put in here is all apparel should be of a neutral position in relation to the library.
Be more specific, right? We could say anything that is Pines and Plains logoed t-shirts or t-shirts with no graphics.
Well, okay, so let's say Denver's going to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
There is, I mean, I.
You could have Bronco Day.
You know, I mean, it to me.
I understand where you're going with this.
Well, because a community will, I mean, I understand it from this side, but I mean, people walking through the door.
But we're not, right, this policy isn't for them.
No, but there's the harassment thing is.
Right.
So, the harassment thing includes our clients.
Right. So
if somebody comes with
that. I thought this was just our dress code.
So, yeah. Well, but it's included with the harassment part.
So there's several different layers of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Right. We've gone up in several different directions. So let's go back to the dress code. So what I hear you saying is that you don't think that you think that t-shirts are acceptable.
Absolutely.
But you're saying t-shirts are acceptable as long as they don't have logos on them.
Okay.
We're
not selling STP here.
As long as they don't have commercial graphics on them or any, they don't have graphics on them, unless it would be a t-shirt that was provided.
Yeah. Let's say they came in and they had advertisement for a restaurant down the street. Where would you be on that?
Well, Bernie, the employees cannot wear it. An employee.
I would say they
cannot.
That would not be professional attire.
Right.
Okay. Well, do we need to say anything that whatever t-shirt you wear needs to be of a, how should I say this, a modest appearance, not suggestive, okay. i.e., because you can have a t-shirt with no armpits and,
That's kind of in there already, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we could, you know, we could make it as for employees, the employee dress code is any t-shirts that would be provided by the library. So if you're doing tie-dye day, they can wear the tie-dye shirt that the library has. Or if it's
I understand what you're saying, and I think that probably is the simplest.
Yeah, but and then as for harassment, that's a whole other.
You don't want to sit there and somebody walks through the door and they're somewhere on the line, and you've got to pull them to the side and say, well, is this commercial? Is this no? If we said we've got Pines and Plains library shirts or a plain T-shirt, mm-hmm. you know.
This was a sticking point with employees about having the T-shirts included in the dress code, because many people wear T-shirts and they wear them as an expression of their creativity and their design, you know.
I got dogs all over my T-shirts.
Right. So, you know, so that's why, you know, my original thinking was, okay, you can wear T-shirts as long as they have the Pines and Plains logo on them. That's fine, you know. But then I'm just like, no, I'm just giving up, because, I mean, you know, what if somebody has a T-shirt, like, you know, remember when the IZOD, you know, yeah. the little alligators? That's a commercial logo. Or a Nike swoosh, you know, which is just a simple little, you know, and then that's on their shoes too. It's just, it's really impossible. I mean, you've got a logo on your shoes right there.
Yeah, so but I'm a trustee.
Exactly. So how do we, you know, where do we draw the line?
But I think you can draw the line at graphic T-shirts, because a graphic T-shirt is a little bit different than, you know, it has a logo. Somebody could come in with a Republican elephant on their T-shirt.
Yeah, if they come in with a donkey shirt, but it doesn't say anything.
So
about
is graphics, if I, okay, let's say I wore a T-shirt that said Merrymaker Yorkies on it, is that graphics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it's a Yorkie, for God's sakes.
My husband has a T-shirt that we bought, or that he bought somewhere, I don't remember, somewhere in Mexico maybe, that has a really stylized skull on it with, you know, the skull with all the flowers.
Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead.
So,
yeah. I mean, but where my head goes is I think about what does professional attire look like? And to me, the Day of the Dead T-shirt isn't.
Right.
But what about
my Scooby-Doo T-shirt.
I mean, I go to a lot of these, like, crane festivals and stuff like that. You got a crane on it. I can, you know, as an educator, I would wear stuff like that all the time, because it was an opportunity to talk to kids about, you know, right. something that was non-political, but, you know, so why would you wear that, Mr. Thomas?
I would be more concerned about like the activity services, because I could see them like, we're doing Scooby-Doo today, I'm gonna wear the Scooby-Doo t-shirt. That would make sense for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe this comes down to more of a basic how they present themselves, because, you know, I'm in other libraries that I've worked in, I mean, we're more rural out here. So people come to work in their jeans and their boots and their, you know, their chambray shirts that they've been, you know, they've been out working with, they're clean, you know, they've been out working with the horses before they come to work or something like that. But, you know, my past life has been, you can wear slacks, you know, but you need to be more like low end business casual. And here people are more like jeans and T-shirts, sort of. So that's the basic, you know. So what I feel like I'm hearing from you guys, from Sheila, is let's dress up a little bit more.
Yeah. And I say that because if the culture here is really that people are used to, I'm coming in my jeans and my yard boots and, you know, I'm clean and I'm presentable, then maybe we shouldn't mess with.
As long as it's apolitical, you can't have that.
No.
You know, no. Or sexist, or, you know, no. I mean, it has to be a common sense sort of, you know.
And I feel like that part would be not, I mean, the political part is common sense, but I feel like some of that's going to be covered under what you were saying earlier, under the unlawful harassment or the sexual harassment. Right. And that, you know, and it's clear here about, you know, like no cartoons, you know, posters, drawings. So you wouldn't, that right. would, you could interpret that as what was on your t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's like I did warranty work and I would tell the guys when I was training a new guy, don't wear a shirt that has offensive language on it. Don't wear a shirt that's going to put you in a certain group one way or the other, because you never know when you walk into a customer's house that may be offensive to them. So let's not push the envelope.
I think it gets that way, especially with religious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question, because I don't have it right in front of me. On that language, do we have anywhere where it says what is acceptable?
For clothing?
Yes.
We're talking about now, there's two different things.
For employees.
For employees.
Yeah. It just says, you know, should be clean, well-groomed, and wearing appropriate clothing. Business casual attire is encouraged. Employees are expected to use good judgment on their appearance and grooming, keeping in mind the nature of the work, their own safety, and the safety of coworkers, and the need to interact with the public. Below are a few guidelines for professional appearance. Clothing should not constitute a safety hazard. All employees should practice common sense rules of cleanliness and comfort. When jeans are appropriate for the position, the jeans must be in good condition. And then it's specific. This is where the t-shirts was. Tank tops, jogging suits, flip-flops, slippers, garments that are unnecessarily revealing, sweatpants, and other similar apparel are generally not permitted. And it used to include t-shirts in that line there.
Okay. Mm. Actually, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I think the t-shirts can be deleted out of there, and the rest of it, it covers.
Then what we've done is we've sort of designated the employer to say, well, that's appropriate or it's right. not.
Well, I mean, if we covered some of this under the harassment section, then we already know that there are certain things like, you know, cartoons and whatnot that might not be appropriate. And then we've also included in that language about, you know, you need to dress appropriately and clean and professionally. And I think we kind of covered it there.
Okay.
I mean, I think we're all of a mind that some t-shirts are okay. And certainly in certain positions at certain times, they're going to want to wear different types of t-shirts that would be professional for that setting.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. All right.
Okay.
Hashtag enough.
An hour in.
I know. All right.
I got dogged the other night for making a comment about wrap it up, lady. First off, I was my wife's.
How mad was your wife?
She looked at me and she says, "That could be sexist."
Do you want to know the ones that have been controversial with staff? So in the previous manual, there was a section that said that if you are not on the clock, you should not be in the back areas. In the staff areas. Well, this is the only library that has really a staff area. But just people just could not quite cope with that. So I just took it out.
Okay.
See a problem with it.
Okay. And emergency closings. So and this is something that you all discussed as a board, that during the pandemic, only the board could make the decision to close the libraries. And what I have changed it here is that the director will work with the board on the closing in the case of a pandemic or communicable disease kind of situation. So before the policy, before the handbook said it's the board's decision, end of story, and I added the director will work with the board.
You and I talked about that one when we met, and I think that makes total sense. I mean,
well, I think it makes sense, but I mean, I'm going to play the devil's advocate again. Sorry, and not because I think this is the way I feel, but something somebody might argue is that if you are a fiduciary, then what you're doing is you're saying, okay, the taxpayers have made an investment here, and you've put us in charge as, you know, trustees to make a decision in regards to, does this make sense? Is there any liability? Where does it, you know, where do the wheels come off? And I, from that standpoint, having, you know, and even in our case, it was really Jim, you know, who's just sitting there saying, well, no, we're not going to do this, you know, and he was calling the shots. And, you know, he might ask us if we agreed, but I don't think it would have much mattered, you know, so... And I know the director would work with him. I understand that language. But what if they are in direct
opposition?
Problem is, what I see, we as board members, we're not here at the plant, so to speak, every day. So how are we to know if snow is 6 foot deep against the wall when at our place we didn't get anything? And so... my thought is, if the director is here,
but that's weather.
Right, that's a separate one. Yeah, well, the director, I do make the call on the weather. You know, I get up like super early on the days that it's supposed to snow. I'm watching. I have this worksheet that I've created for myself. I look at who's closed all around us.
You need a hobby.
About that, because I think you make a fair point, but my observation when we were going through this is that, first off, she is kind of boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. We're not here. If a decision needs to be made quickly, then she's got to get on the phone with all of us. Or
With weather, I'm down.
Well, I'm not just talking about weather. We don't know
how the pandemic.
This is specific for pandemic.
Like suddenly 5 employees call in with COVID tomorrow, are we really, you know, gonna hold a meeting to discuss whether or not the library is gonna close?
No, but I
have more to say on this.
Go ahead.
And that is that my observation is that while she's working with the board on this, and you make the good point of like, what if we're in complete opposition? Well, to defy the board on something like this gets her fired.
Yeah. This is my performance evaluation is coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you notice I called you honey, so
concert. So, you know, I just kind of feel like it's one of those things like, you know, yes, you're the one kind of boots on the ground.
Right.
You're going to want to consult with us. You're probably not going to want to make a decision you know we're going to hate.
Well, I don't want to make it by myself.
Right.
Well,
you're going to get
But let's go also back for just a second.
Right.
We never made a decision that we were not involved with the health department.
Oh, you guys, because I wasn't here during the pandemic. I have no idea.
So we tracked the numbers. We tracked our own health department. Yeah. And we based everything that we did on data.
With the health department. Said or recommended.
Okay.
I mean,
to me, again, there is a difference. One is a fiduciary.
Yeah. I'm just saying that she might need to make a flash decision right there, but then she's going to come back to us and she's certainly going to take us into account in any flash decision that she makes. So I think it's fair to give her that some leeway in that. And the way that it's worded, I think, is actually lovely.
I think if you're saying pandemic, that's a hell of a lot, but we're, you know, different than, you know, we had four people come down with, you know, some sort of strange illness or what have you, yeah. Then of course we'd have to take your, you know, it's like we can't.
Well, and then there's also the point, there's X number of us, and not all of us answer the phone. I mean, today I know you called me twice. First number didn't work because our phone, if you don't get there by the third ring, you ain't, it cuts you off. So then you call my cell phone, and you got me on the cell phone. So again, if she makes the effort to call one of us, to include one of us in the situation, it's not her obligation to call all of us, and because again, she's boots on the ground, and it's.
Yeah. For instance, I wasn't on the board when the pandemic started, when the shutdown happened. But I know at my court, we were in the middle of term of court, which means that I had judges and law clerks all over my courthouse. They'd all flown in from 5-6 states to hear cases. And they threw a party in the middle of it. They were supposed to be presenting the Byron White bobblehead, the Historical Society. So on the 11th of March, I was at the courthouse running a party that nobody was coming to because everybody was like, I don't know, it doesn't seem like a good idea to be at a party. And on the 12th, I was teleworking. I got an email at 9 a.m. that said, okay, tomorrow everybody come into the office. We're going to have a meeting. We got to talk about this pandemic. And at 11 a.m., we have an email saying, no, nobody come to the office. Nobody come to the office at all. You're not coming to the office.
Right.
And it was just one of those crazy, weird things where, you know, my boss was on the phone with the chief judge, just making decisions with very little information.
Right.
Well, everybody, yeah, everybody was making.
So what did you do with the bobblehead?
I still have like 50 of them.
I'll take one.
But that's also kind of,
I mean, getting back to, I really, the only stipulation that I would have is if it, that word pandemic is a lot different than.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't apply to the weather or anything.
Right.
That kind of.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would seriously think if most of your employees called in sick, that would be a big concern for all the trustees to learn about.
Absolutely.
Because it's like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know.
You know,
some of these things that pop up are, they're serious. I mean, we've had that in school before where somebody had a particularly nasty iteration of the flu. And all of a sudden you got 15 teachers out. And you're going, whoa, you know, because towards the end of my tenure as a teacher, we never had enough substitutes. So you'd end up, I mean, I had literally classes sometimes of 150 kids. You know, that's nuts.
Yeah.
That's called crowd control. So
I think... The way you got it there is fine because we're paying you because of your decision making abilities, and as a trustee board, I would like to think we have confidence in you that you're going to make the right decision, and you don't need to have us looking over your shoulder on every little thing. So.
I agree.
Okay.
The only other change is one that I should bring up. So we're changing the name. It used to be sick/personal leave, and we're changing it to be sick leave. And we're going to go by what is listed in the law for the reasons that you can take sick leave. Mm-hmm. So in the past, the way that they looked at vacation and sick slash personal was this way. Mm-hmm. And legally, I feel like I have to look at it as very separate pieces. Mm-hmm. That it's, this is vacation, you take vacation because we want you to be healthy and happy. We want you to take a rest. We want you to go visit family or whatever you need to do. We got this for sick time. You know, you've got a doctor's appointment. You know, take sick time. You've got to, you know, you've got a sick child. You take sick time. So that's I'm trying to delineate those two.
It's reasonable.
Okay. But I would think if an employee does not have sick time available, they could say, I am taking vacation hours.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You just need to note that it's vacation hours because they don't want to have unpaid hours.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
I think that's a pretty standard practice, isn't it? But no, I think that's reasonable.
Okay.
Because there's different laws governing them as well.
Do you have any other questions about the policy? I mean,
there was a deal about cameras. Is that places being under surveillance? That was in the old handbook, and it was if I remember right, that was a big contention point. I think that was before you came on.
No, I was here.
But anyway, is that out still?
The librarians were concerned. Were we not
looking over their shoulder?
Yeah, I don't remember. Sheila, do you remember anything in there about cameras?
No.
I think it was taken out.
Okay, that's what I'm saying, that it's still out and it remains out.
Yeah. Do we have any cameras?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Do we have any kind of security situation that watches the front door?
Whether that we have them or not, at some point, or the other, if you had a problem with, some theft thing or, you were worried, let's say kids got together and beat the hell out of somebody, and at a certain point, you'd have to stand up and say, well, maybe we need to have something like this to surveil what's going on in the library. And I can see them doing that. They did that in schools. I mean, and I can remember having the conversation the first time they brought it up, because the parents wanted the cameras pointed at the teachers. And the teachers said, if that bad boy doesn't go all the way around the room, then you're missing, the kind of abuse that teachers sometimes have to put up with. Mm-hmm. So surveillance will always get you an argument, because mm-hmm. nobody wants to be watched because it feels like you're not trusted. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that stands up in court if an organization, we are a government entity. What government entity do you know of that doesn't have surveillance,
And I could see a distinction here, like, are we going to have surveillance, say, in the office space? I mean, obviously, you're not going to put surveillance in the bathrooms. But here we have a lot of public space. We have a public foyer where people coming in and out. We have the public space in the library. And yes, our employees work in the public space, but really, are they going to get up to something in the public space?
It's not to watch. I mean, if we ever did something like that, I'm sure it wouldn't be to watch the employees. Now, so an employee could be caught doing something if they were doing something.
That was the complaint.
Well, I know as an election judge, you're under surveillance the whole time you're in that county facility. It's under surveillance.
Yeah.
And you're not an election judge if you're not.
Yeah, if you won't be surveilled.
Right.
But at this point, do we feel like we have a need to do surveillance on the mail? No. Are people stealing
The biggie would be surveillance of the entrance if we're having people breaking into vandalism and we have it repeatedly. I mean, after the third time, I would start to be thinking, maybe we ought to put up a camera, at least even a fake camera, so that people, whoever's doing this, is going to take a pause.
Meeting rooms, if you had damage done in.
Yeah. But I would also think, because I used to, who's going to sit there and watch these videos if nothing happens? If something happens, it would be wonderful to have that video.
Yeah, so I can speak from both situations. I've been in a library that had, you know, incredible amounts of cameras, and I got really good at watching them and finding, you know, what I needed to see. And I've also, you know, a library that I was at, not, it was before I was there, but a woman was raped in the parking lot. And, you know, we had a camera in the parking lot, but it didn't cover that. It didn't help in that situation. It was an employee, actually.
And then you get the big what if.
So,
yeah. You know, what if, could we have helped?
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's a good question. If it's not in there now, so let's
leave it.
You're on camera.
Yeah, I think so. And everybody's got the stupid rings on their front door.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, when we renovate this building, it could be part of what we do. It may not be part of what we do, you know.
For the time being, though,
Okay, is there anything else?
Nope. That's all I've got.
Okay, well, then seeing nobody screaming to move on to another topic, can I have a motion to?
I would make a motion that we adjourn then.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you.